What this is, this is actually similar to talks I've given in Ghetto, Los Alamos, Gozumel, and various places. And so if you've been there, I do apologize. You might see some new parts of the talk. But what it does is it actually addresses what we talked about most of last week. So I thought it would be very appropriate to repeat it for those who haven't seen it, and to put on those view graphs that others haven't seen, and maybe even get some discussion going. The idea here is first to start with this state, the Lohard, which it's really, the Lohard is a slightly different state. It's a plateau state that produces a jet. And try to understand what might be going on there in some fairly detailed way. So the main points of the talk, I'll just give you the punchlines right away. This was for the AGN people at Cozumel, that microquasars are very important, and that people really should start thinking about them in detail. Because most people think about AGN jets, and there's only a handful of theorists who are actually beginning to think about these binary black hole jets, microquasar jets. So this is a review of what you saw last week. This radial plateau state, which occurs somewhere up in the upper part of this, with the back neck of the turtle. What I'm going to argue is that the inner many tens of Schwarzschild radii of the accretion flow is remarkably quiet and non-turbulent, and that it's not undergoing MRI, although there are parts of the disk that I think are. It's not in what people would call an ADAP state, but it is producing a jet. And I claim that the observations are consistent with the flow being in a magnetically dominated state, which I've given, for lack of a better term, MDAF, for magnetically dominated accretion flow. And the evidence for this and what this accretion flow, new kind of accretion flow, can possibly explain is the bandwidth-limited noise that Ron talked about, the low-frequency QPO. By low, we mean somewhat under 10 hertz. And the sub-relativistic jet, which I'll go through these in a little bit more detail in a minute. I also claim that some of the higher accretion states can actually, of 1915, are consistent with this MDAF concept as well, because the QPO, is that not showing well?
Yeah.
Okay. Because you'll see in a moment, in several states, the QPO frequency actually increases with decreasing inner radius, and that is consistent with what I will show as the MDAF concept. And this is Rob Fender's idea that the inferred increase in jet speed to relativistic values is also consistent with the decreasing decreasing disk radius. I'll also not just talk about phenomenology, but actually come up with some theory. It's What's that? This thing?
Right here.
I don't think it can be moved. I'll actually delve into some theory, although it won't be pure full MRI 3D simulations. This will be more along the lines of Chacron-Sinai effect accretion analysis. So the first thing is the observational evidence that that magnetically dominated flows may be playing a role in 1915. And here's the plateau state. But what is plotted here is the X-ray flux as a function of time, and the radio flux as a function of time. And these purple bars show the two times when the plateau state was entered. This is a fairly low but not off X-ray state, and the radio flux is in a very steady steady state. And let's see if I can see this. That's at least several tens, if not hundreds, of days between those two points. The this level is of order 100 millijanseys, so it's fairly strong radio. This X-ray looks like it's. Do I have this backwards? Is this the X-ray and this the radio? That seems to say millijansky there. Aha, okay. Yeah, the top one's radio. I do apologize. But in any case, they're doing about the same thing. This is 100 millijanskys or more, a couple hundred millijanskys, as you can see here. The X-rays are rather low. There are more, there are higher flaring states in some cases. The VLA image, here's Vivek Dhawan's image of 1915, and here it's at least a one-sided and possibly two-sided jet, but it appears to be fairly steady, and any attempt to measure it, its speed has come up with something on the order of a few tenths C or less. And 1915 can stay in this sort of state for several weeks, which is an enormous number of dynamical times near the black hole. You've seen plots like this before from Ron. These are two power spectra that I'm comparing. One is in the high state, where we expect just to have a cool disk, and the other is in this plateau state that's producing a jet. The power spectrum in the high state, I'm going to go through this in more detail later, is consistent with what you would get from the atmosphere of a turbulent cool disk. But in the plateau state, that's only true at the lower frequency end. If you go to the higher frequencies, you see this shoulder that develops, and the obvious thing that's happening there is we're seeing some sort of corona or ADF-like flow that's in the inner portion of the disk, perhaps starting at a radius corresponding to roughly this frequency, which would be a few thousand gravitational radii. The thing is that it does not extend all the way to kilohertz frequencies, and this is, I think, very important. The fact that it is cut off at low frequencies is to me quite striking. One would expect these ADAFs, which are two temperature flows, and they're supposed to be two temperatures, to remain geometrically thick as you get all the way into the black hole. You'd expect the turbulence also to be quite strong and to reach toward kilohertz frequencies, and it does not. Instead, it's cut off at a few hertz.
You and I have talked about this before, David.
Yes.
Can you remind us what the parallel index is, though, that red, the high frequency end of that?
I actually asked Ron that question. He said it's steeper than minus 2. He said something like minus 2.5. I actually tried to measure that off of his diagram. This is Morgan et al., and Ron was on this paper as well. And I got something like 11/3. And in fact, this red line is an 11/3 line drawn onto the diagram. But when I talked about that in Amsterdam, Tommaso Bologna gave me a lot of trouble for that comment on backing off from that. He said that you can't, because of dead time and the way that power spectra cut off, you can't do more than minus 2. Ron thinks you can do better, and he's going to attempt to do that. So the real answer as to what that is physically is unknown.
You're saying it could be steeper than minus 2, then?
Ron says it could be much steeper than minus 2. Whether it could be minus 11/3 is an open question. If it's 11/3, then basically you're cutting off and seeing the last, the last turbulence at some radius. And if it's less steep, then you're seeing some sort of bleeding in from different radii. At least that's what I would claim. In addition, the cutoff then lands you a nice, very strong QPO at low frequencies. And if that reflects an orbital frequency, it's on the order of many tens of gravitational radii, say 40 or 50 short field radii. The easiest way to get that sort of structure is to have a rigidly rotating structure, say a magnetized corona or flow, at the, which would be rotating at roughly the Keplerian rate of this inner edge. And if you have field lines that reach inward, you're also going to have field lines that reach outward, as magnetospheres tend to do. And so with this ADF, geometrically thick ADF, feeding plasma onto these open field lines, you're likely to get a jet. And past work on launching jets from accretion disks of this nature tend to give jets that have terminal speeds on the order of the escape speed from this radius, which would give you a few tenths of the speed of light. So this is all a little more than phenomenology, but not much. But at this point, I would say that the observations have strongly suggested that what's happening in this plateau state is that there's a magnetically dominated accretion flow, which starts almost as large as 50 Schwarzschild radii.
In your picture here, the yellow ADF, that's still a high beta plasma?
Yes. Yes. And optically thin, so that you can see deep down into the turbulence.
Is the amplitude of the fluctuation the same scale in both of those panels? That is, there's no vertical scale mark for the right-hand panel.
The amplitude is the same, but you know, it's the RMS divided by the mean. So. So it's only a relative amplitude.
You describe this as going to a state in which variation in the inner portion is squelched. But I guess I wouldn't describe the difference between left and right as going, as raising the level of fluctuations in the, you know, 0.1 to 10 hertz range, and leaving largely unchanged the rest of the spectrum.
That's not inconsistent with what I said. I would agree with everything you said. That this raising of this shoulder is the appearance of this structure.
So the inner disk isn't particularly quieter than in the left-hand state. It's that the intermediate frequencies are more acceptable.
Fair enough. I don't disagree. And I could have drawn it with this disk going down into the depths of this. Now, whether this is noise or real signal is another question. That I don't know anything about this. Yeah. And this is overwhelming everything else, just the shoulder. So if there is fluctuation from a disk, it's completely masked. So we don't know whether it's there or not. But I would agree that that's an equally valid interpretation of this, and not inconsistent with what I've said here. What important thing is that whatever rose only in the intermediate frequencies and not only up to the higher frequencies, and that it is cut off. So now this concept of an MDAF actually has some relation to what people have done before. It's closely related to this concept of a black hole magnetosphere that people like Tomimatsu and Takahashi and also Demetrius Densky have worked on recently. In this case, they use a thin disk in which I suppose that there must be some sort of MRI going on, but in the magnetosphere, the MRI is turned off. And you get accretion inward along the closed field lines, and possibly a wind or a jet coming out of the open field lines. But in the types of MDAFs that I'm talking about, they're generally, or at least I'm suggesting that they can be up to 10 times larger than what these guys are talking about here. But otherwise, things are pretty much the same, with the additional change that we might have an ADF seeding it. What I like to think about it, the way I like to think about it, though, is it's an accretion disk magnetosphere. That the field, the disk really truncates at some radius, And then it has a magnetosphere that reaches toward two infinities. One is the horizon of the black hole, and the other is the true infinity at large radii. In any case, the field lines stretch outward, and they create either a channel-type flow toward the black hole, or a wind or jet away from the disk. And then this whole thing, because it's magnetically stiff, is rotating at roughly a constant rate of speed at the Keplerian value of the transition radius, the Keplerian speed of the transition radius.
Should we take that picture literally that you've drawn there, in the sense that you get a hollow cylinder for a jet in this model? Wrapped around the third
actor. Yeah. I mean, that's... You should take it as literally as you believe my suggestions here. But
really have the jet being launched from this intermediate radius,
right.
Not at the location of the horizon.
That's correct. In this state, this is a slow jet, not a relativistic jet, and so we're talking about something that would be characteristic either of these low hard set objects or von Raphael Rayleigh class 1 objects, not things that show very fast relativistic jets, which generally would have to be launched much near the black hole.
Is the sun's density in this iteration much less than in the
universe? Well, it's an interesting question. I know what, I have solutions for the density of the flow and the velocity and so on. I should just integrate it and answer your question later on.
Okay. So I think radial velocity speeds up, or most of the mass is ejected.
In the models I have, I don't take the ejection into account. I just do a accretion flow model, and yes, there is quite a bit of. I mean, m dot remains constant throughout the solutions I'm going to show you, and so there is a significant mass density, a significant sigma. The velocity speeds up somewhat. It becomes almost free fall. But in the ADEF, it's like a third free fall already, so it's only a factor of two or so faster than the ADEF impulse speed. And so I'm going to propose that this kind of structure can form in the inner portion of different types of disks, not just ADEFs. And that might help us understand a little bit more about some of the other aspects of these sources. Looking at them from the top, the solutions I'm going to show actually have a short radial spiral where the radial field grows faster than the azimuthal field, so you don't get a full term. It's very likely, but of course this is just an assertion right now, that this won't be axisymmetric, that it'll break up into channels. And if that's the case, as you look at this thing, unless you're looking at it right from the top, you're going to see correlations as these different channels sweep around. And the thermal synchrotron, which is going to be somewhat beam, it sweeps across your line of sight. So there'll be it'll correlate at a frequency roughly equal to the orbital frequency at this point, at the inner transition radius, and that'll give you a QPO. And that's the frequency at that radius, the orbital frequency. This is also an Alphane, a large rotating Alphane wave, if you will. And you can get a few hertz out of it if the transition radius from ADAF to MDAF is on the order of 100 RG. And as I said, in addition to closed field lines, you should get open field lines as the magnetosphere modelers show, and that should drive a jet. I wrote a paper some time ago which claimed that if you have a thick accretion flow and you have a global magnetic field, that can easily feed the jet flow, whereas if you have a thin accretion disk or you don't have these global field lines, then you don't expect a jet. And these are the two conditions you really would like to have in order to get one. So that's that's a nice aspect. And again, many modelers, including Uchida, Shibata, Matsumoto, and so on, all find that in this, with this sort of condition, you get a jet that's launched, and fairly hollow, you get a jet that's launched at roughly the escape speed at that point, and in this case, it's also of order C times C. So, because that goes as out of the minus one half, if for some reason this inner radius decreases, then the jet speed will actually increase. And if you can reach radiated or close to the last stable orbit or beyond, the jet speed will become null to distance. This is just an old simulation from Uchida and also from Masanori Nakamura's thesis that shows how this sort of magnetic power working from the inner edge of a thick disk can launch a jet. Now, in addition to the low hard state, which is, or the plateau state, which is what we just talked about, there are many other states that I've alluded to over the last week. And here are five of them. Again, this is 1915. The one I want to call your attention to is this one in which the ballistic jets are produced. This is sort of the limit cycle that you've heard about, in which you go into a hard state, and it's low, so this is X-ray flux, drops dramatically, and then slowly climbs. And at the same time, as you drop in flux, you increase in hardness. So this is the low, hard plateau state. But it only lasts temporarily. Then the X-ray flux increases, the hardness ratio drops, so you become softer. And at this peak here, it's believed that that the X-ray jet is produced, and then that eventually becomes the ballistic radio jet. Now, the interesting thing is the QPO. This is QPO frequency, and this is amazingly difficult to see and easy to see on my laptop. This is the QPO frequency as a function of time and as you go through this, and it tracks this U-shape as you enter and leave the low hard state. So here the QPO is fairly high, and this is 10 hertz, so it's more than 10 hertz, then drops down to a few hertz, and then as you begin to, it quickly drops down as you enter the hard state, and then as you soften, it rises. So you can see that exactly follows the luminosity. Well, the same thing happens in all these other states. Here you drop and then go up, and here's the U, the QPO U. Here's the X-ray flux U, here's the QPO U. And you can't see it here, I'm sorry. But it happens in all five of these states. And what this is consistent with, and what's been proposed for this this sort of behavior, at least in these for these two parts of the diagram, is that the disk inner radius is as you drop into the hard state, it actually increases up this sort of this line. This is from Rob Bender's diagram. And so when you're in the hard state, the disk inner radius is quite large. And then as you soften, the disk inner radius becomes smaller, and you begin to develop a thin disk that reaches toward the black hole. It's actually, it can be quantified. They take this luminosity and they divide by the fourth power of the temperature that's implied by the hardness.
Okay. And
correct. Yes, that is exactly correct. So it's the inner radius of the thermally radiant. Correct. So, and that's an important point, and a lot of people don't say that when they give a talk, including but in fact, I'm glad you pointed that out. It is the inner radius of the thermally radiating material, and it's obtained by taking the luminosity at NH time and dividing by the fourth power of the temperature that you infer from the hardness. And that gives the inner radius. So you can see as you do that, as this drops, with a very large a fairly high temperature inferred, the radius actually increases as you become hard. And as you soften, the radius becomes smaller. Now, this idea that the disk radius is decreasing is consistent with the MDAP concept and the fact that the QPO frequencies are making this this U-shaped excursion, because the idea is that initially when you're very hard, this disk does not even encroach on the inner portion of the ADAP, but as you increase the accretion rate, this thermal part of the disk encroaches and eventually overcomes the ADAP and pushes this MDAP inward. So now both its Keplerian rotation rate, which is giving you the QPO, and the jet speed increase as the disk inner radius decreases. Sure.
How does this radius change actually physically? I mean, my problem with this.
What's causing it to change physically? I think that's an open question, but I know what people in the field generally think.
Well, my problem with this picture is that if you say that, you know, on the right view the diagram, that this is basically standard cool disk, then the inner edge of this disk should move with this time scale for this.
Mm-hmm.
And that is quite long compared to, you know, this time scale rising and falling with the light curve. So
actually, that's not true. It was actually simulated this, and for this particular state here, the viscous time scale works out very well. This is of order the time from here to here is of order 20 minutes.
Yeah, so this cycle can be made.
I agree with you as far as the duration of this, but if you look, for example, this left diagram on the upper left corner, if you see almost top on very sharp rises.
Mm-hmm.
The duration of the rise is so short. It's much shorter than the cycle itself.
This one here, yes.
I would argue that this changes in the radius should occur in much shorter time scale.
Well, I mean, it could be that I've put some states up here that really don't belong. There's 1, 2, 3 states with rather long egress times, and maybe this egress is short and it doesn't belong on this diagram. And in that case, then you might not expect this heartbeat state to be there either, or at least something slightly different might be happening. The point I wanted to show was that in all of these cases, the QPO follows very closely the change in luminosity, and generally thought that the change in luminosity is creating an oscillation in the inner radius of the thermal part of the disk.
Well, I was going to say, if there was ever a case where the Shishikura-Sunyaev models are overinterpreted, it's in taking an alpha description literally down to the inner edge of the disk. When you do a simulation and you actually look at the alpha parameter, it goes through the roof at the very inner edge of the disk.
Right.
And so the difference between evolving on a viscous time scale and a dynamical time scale becomes blurred at that point.
Right.
But you may not really, I mean, I think that's, I think it's a overinterpret.
As it must in this case, where it becomes,
right.
He assumes it's going to have to dominate.
Exactly. So VDAR defines the norm.
Now, I'd be extremely happy to see this sort of thing simulated using MRI, but as I will continue to say throughout this talk, putting the cooling and the radiation in is crucial, because we see states where there's a drop of sometimes an order of magnitude in the X-ray flux, and so things are changing quite dramatically radiatively. And so I think there's a whole new world out there in terms of radiating and thermally important MRI flows that we're just on the verge of beginning to do.
Yeah. We'll get to this later in time, but just so I can visualize the qualitative statements of it.
Sure.
You said that you're not in dynamically dominated regions, you will be.
Yeah. Right now, in the analytic models, I assume that a beta of 1 or an alpha of 1 is where the MRI turns off.
Yeah, but just, you know, somewhere vaguely in the middle of the dynamically dominated
regions. It gets all the way to 10 to the minus 2 beta does as you get closer to the black hole. So 0.1 to 0.01.
You said it would be so dominated that it will be forced through, or really so?
Yes. With the plasma primarily being channeled. The models that I developed assume that the magnetic field is providing most of the vertical pressure.
Are you going to get to this later?
Yeah.
I'll save
at least that. We'll see. So here is part of the story as I see it. This is again the turtle diagram, and all through the neck, we have this standard ADAF plus MDAF structure, which is not marred by the this thin thermal disk that's encroaching from below. But we begin to turn the corner as the thin disk then actually becomes more dominant, both in terms of forming a smaller radius and also in terms of providing so many soft photons that this ADAF corona begins to collapse. And then as we approach the jet line, the jet itself is now becoming quite relativistic because the ADAF itself is pretty small. And once you cross the jet line, then I'm not sure what's happening because we don't see a jet in this region, and yet one might expect from this set of models. And even as we become softer and softer, one would expect some sort of MDAF near or inside the ergosphere. So I'm not going to try to really understand this. I'll speculate about it a little bit later and throw up some clues as to what I think might be going on.
Yeah, as Ron emphasized to us, crossing the jet line is where it's frequently, and what he calls it, is the power loss state.
Correct.
And how do you imagine that in this year terms?
Let me get through that, because I don't have, that was something I learned about this week, where this talk was developed 7 months ago. So give me a few months to think about this, and maybe I will try to get something. But this is the general idea, at least up to the jet line. And it's pretty, I think it's pretty consistent with what's going on. And I believe it's a good point for discussion. I want to point out that this is not a big paradigm shift, that really we're keeping all of the standard accretion theory and even the ADAF stuff up to a few tens of Schwarzschild radii. And that gives us the photon spectrum, at least qualitatively, that you would get at 100 or more keV. And we're only replacing the standard theory for the much smaller radius. It's also consistent with what people have done with black hole magnetospheres already, and it preserves this idea of inward and outward winds that people sometimes talk about with stagnation point. And if the MDAF is fairly small, you could get very strong coupling between this inner edge of the rotating material and a rotating black hole. And in fact, the interaction between these magnetic field lines is they spiral into the rotating black hole could be quite interesting, and transfer a significant amount of angular momentum from the black hole out to this radius, and help add to the production of a jet, especially when the MDAF is small. So I claim that these provide, at least as a start, a natural synthesis of accretion, magnetosphere, and jet production theories, and that a complete picture of accretion and jet production, at least up to the jet line, might be nearby. Now, this is Ron's challenge. What are these next states, the C parallel and the soft states? And there are some clues, but I still really don't know what's going on. The clues are that we, in the SPL state, we have a strong non-thermal power law and weak thermal emission. We have a high-frequency QPO, and at lower luminosity, he called it the 3 omega 1, or I'm sure Mark would think of it as the 3 halves omega, or the 3 halves frequency. That dominates, and at the higher luminosity, the one that's 2 omega dominates. But there's no jet in the SPL state that the observers can see. And then the same thing is true in the soft state. There's no jet, but there are also no QPOs. And the thermal emission dominates, and the power law is there, but it's weak. So all I want to do is begin to speculate as to what this might mean in terms of MDAS. If this is true, then it would mean that the magnetosphere was still dominant in this situation. But without a jet, the field lines that would be driving a strong jet must be closed. So either they're closed over the hole or they're closed onto the disk, and we're not getting a very strong vertical outflow. The fact that the high-frequency QPO, the 3 halves one, dominates at lower luminosity may mean that if we're, and I like Marek and Vladek's model for producing these double QPOs, would mean that at higher luminosity, the radial epicyclic frequency would dominate for some reason. I don't know why, but my question for Mark is, are there any implications for the structure of the disk or the magnetosphere if this is in fact the case? And then finally, for the soft state, it's obvious that the thermal disk is dominating. And because you don't have any jets or QPOs, the field lines must be, or much of a power law spectrum, the magnetosphere itself must be pretty weak. So this is as far as I'm going to go, thinking about these two states, because this is only the first time I've really thought about these two new entities. But that's a start. And does that answer any of your questions?
No.
Make it more money. Well,
I'm nervous about the statement that the SPL state has weak thermal emission. Because the power law is very, I mean, it depends on what radiation process do you think is?
Okay, it's relatively weak compared to the power law. Good point.
Well, no, I don't think it's, yeah, no, I don't think even that is true.
That was often comparable.
Yeah.
There are cases where it's weak, but it's often comparable.
Yeah. Okay, I thought you were going to say it doesn't exist. No, there's a very strong peak there. Yeah. But it was just that the power law itself.
It's fairly obvious that power laws are not signals of locally non-thermal behavior.
But it's not a bad way to place to start.
No, but I
if we're starting with strong field lines, you're asking what I thought in terms of the MDAP model, and this is the extension.
No, I think the non-thermal power is because it extends up to such high energies. That's what Ron was claiming.
Yeah, I'll agree with you. And saying that it's weak here is wrong. Comparable thermal emission, whereas here the thermal is strong. The power law is definitely weak in the soft state.
But it's important, right? Because if the thermal emission is comparable, and I guess you're still imagining that the disk is going quite a ways in. In fact, you are imagining.
Sure. Now the disk, to get to this point, you've already brought the disk all the way in. The question is, what happened to the jet?
Yeah.
And why did we suddenly get very high frequency QPOs? I think the high frequency QPO is actually just an extension of the low frequency QPO. And so you're just seeing an MDAP-like structure swing around. But the question here is, what happens to the jet?
Where do you have the dissipation required for heating? And if it's, if the accretion rate is very rapid, then you have low optical depth and won't thermalize. So you don't get the emission.
Now, he's imagining the disk that goes all the way in, and then inside roughly the ISCO now, he has this MDOT. I mean, he's now, the MDOT has become the plunging region.
Oh, okay. I see.
Yes.
You squeeze it all the way into the plunging region.
That's right. So now we're back almost to what she wrote a couple of papers about before, which is just the plunging region is now the MDAF. And at the end of the very high state, you're still producing the jet, but somehow you transition to this SPL state, which the jet turns off. The MDAF is still in the plunging region, but what has happened? What's that?
Sometimes a particularly large burst range.
Yes.
Same transition.
That's right. And then eventually that even the power law goes away and you're left with basically something that's mostly thermal. That's most of you already know these things, but this is sort of a statement of what we know with some reference back to the MDAF concept. But I don't know where to go after this right now. So I will go to another topic, which is the funnel jet. The MRI simulations show pointing flux dominated well ordered jets in the funnel, and I think this is becoming a very robust result from a lot of different groups. This sort of jet should be highly beamed and highly relativistic, and the question is, do we see these in the observations? And I have a suggestion for what these jets are. They don't look anything like these low heart state jets that that I showed a picture of earlier. What I believe we're seeing, where we're seeing them, are the IDB quasars. And if you don't know what an IDB quasar is, I'll describe it very briefly. It's an intraday variable, and it's believed that the variability has nothing to do with the intrinsic variability of the source, but rather that we're looking at an extraordinarily compact, very high brightness temperature source pointing right at us. And there's a scattering screen passing in front of that that causes it to scintillate. It turns out that such a scattering screen only seems to exist in one spot in the southern hemisphere. And so there's a small patch of the sky, or moderate-sized patch of the sky, where these IDB quasars pop up. And the scattering screen that's doing it is fairly close. He tends to park it away. So elsewhere in the northern hemisphere and elsewhere around the sky, you don't see these IDB quasars. One that's very famous is 1519-273. It has a very compact 0.4 Jansky core that's believed to be on the order of several micro arc seconds. With that sort of parameter set, you derive Lorentz factors of several tens at least. They're very high Lorentz factors. And then the structure around it is nearly, well, it's a very small one-sided jet, and that's about a Jansky and a half. It's a milliarc second core, and there you derive Lorentz factors of order of 10. So, we got a very strong microarc second core and a milliarc second core. What does that mean? Well, actually, if you debeam those by the ratio of their Lorentz factors to some appropriate power, which is either 2 or 3, depending upon what you think the character of the jet is, you find that the ratio of this IDB, the very compact high Lorentz factor jet, to the broader and less and only moderately relativistic jet is on the order of 1%. Which means that if this is in fact what's causing the IDB core, it itself is fairly weak compared to what the disk is doing out here in producing this rather strong milliarc second jet. And so the picture that I'd like to draw looks something like this, with a very high Lorentz factor core that you only see when you have a scattering screen passing in front of it and when this is pointing at you. And the more typical Lorentz factor 10 jet that's surrounding it that we usually see when we look at BLDI sources. And maybe this is a typical structure for all quasars, and we only see it in these sources that are behind the scattering screen and pointing right at us. So it's food for thought. It's the best example I can come up with that may be what the simulators are actually seeing in this funnel, because it does not seem to have the properties of the other kinds of jets that people observe.
But isn't it very hard to relate what you get close to the black hole to what you see on large scales because of huge collimation issues? You can basically change.
I agree with you.
The direct connection between the two may be dangerous. Hmm?
Well, of course. But what else are you going to do? There is clearly a jet being produced here. And the jet clearly is very pointing flux dominated in the simulations. And it has very little matter in it. So it's expected to have a high Lorentz factor. I mean, there might be some sort of black weather that does something else to it between the black hole horizon and several parsecs out. But the properties of high pointing flux domination and high Lorentz factor would seem to indicate that's something quite different from what you would expect from a disk, and it's something that I would be much more readily ready to identify with this IDV core than with some other kind of jet coming from the. Yeah, I agree with you that this is an attempt to link the numerical simulations with some actual observation.
But you could turn the argument around. You could say clearly, since you see these jets and they're on such large scales and they must have their origins down on the RG scale, it would be dangerous to ignore what's going on very locally when you're trying to model these very large jets.
Definitely. I agree.
Well done.
The lawyer's
so, trick. Yeah, that's a good way to put it, actually. And pulling out the high Lorentz factor is a good way to start, because that brings you right close to the horizon anyway. Okay, so now I'm going to get into the idea of theoretically why we might get large MDAFs in states like the plateau state. And the real question to answer is, what would cause an ADAF to be cut off? What would cause an ADAF to be cut off at several tens of gravitational radii? And the most obvious thing is that it is not a two-temperature flow. In two-temperature flows, the disk stays geometrically thick, optically thin, but geometrically thick, and it gets as hot as several times 10 to the 12 K. The electrons themselves radiate at 10 to the 10 to 10 to the 11 K, so you maintain a two-temperature structure. If this doesn't happen, and for some reason there might be some energy transfer between the very hot ions, which are a factor of 100 higher in temperature than the electrons, to the electrons, then you will get a one-temperature flow, or nearly one-temperature flow. And if that's the case, when the virial temperature becomes greater than the electron temperature, or when the radius becomes less than this order, which is on the order of several tens of RG or more, then the ADAF will collapse, and you'll get a thinner disk in the center. You won't get this nice gas pressure supported ADAF. Now, even the ADAF people think that this might be a possibility, but this is the place to start of the observation and the cutoff. This is not the reason for this, for believing that MDAFs might be at work in these sources. This is now an idea of how an MDAF might actually be formed. So.
Well, I just wanted to note that, theoretically speaking, the electrons and ions are best coupled largely in the the container data in those models. So if, you know, you would expect that the collapse would be happening in the outer regions first, then in the inner.
So what are you assuming the coupling is? Is Coulomb? Well, sure. But and here, if Coulomb is the only coupling, then ADAP model is correct and this is wrong. This would rely on some other coupling mechanism. Coulomb alone can't do it, and I agree. Now, this sort of thing, this sort of collapse, definitely would not have been seen in MRI simulations, except for Nakita-san's and Nakamoto-san's that actually put in cooling, because without cooling, the gas temperature remains at the virial, or the gas pressure remains at the virial pressure. So the whole thing remains, as you can see, very geometrically thick all the way down to the horizon. And it turns out that this ADAF collapse scenario, just by keeping the temperature of the two components more or less equal, this produces the kind of collapse that at just the radius that we need to see a cutoff in 1915 power spectrum. So this is a place to begin to look as to why you might get a sudden dramatic change in the structure of the inner portion of the disk.
David, I can't help thinking when you showed that slide, this reminded me of gamma ray burst accretion flow models as well, where the inner regions are neutrino cooled and the ADAF, the putative ADAF also collapses now because neutrino cooling suddenly becomes very important. You end up with a geometric vacuum disk.
Okay.
Just a thought that you might want to think about MDAS in the context of power and gamma ray bursts, because exactly the same sort of thing happens geometrically in
that regime. I'm not familiar with that. Those particular models, but have they thought at all about?
They haven't thought about magnetic fields. Magnetic fields. The properties of the cooling.
Okay. Well, let me go through why I think magnetic fields might become interesting, and in this ADAF collapse, and the idea starts with first reviewing ADAFs. They are not magnetically advective, even though they're called advective only in accretion flows. Because the eddy turnover time is necessarily shorter than the inflow time. That gets you the similar scaling, or the self-similar scaling, between the radial and, say, the azimuthal fields. They both scale as r to the minus 5 quarters, and because the gas pressure scales as r to the minus 5 halves in these solutions, then the ratio of the magnetic stresses to the thermal stresses is constant, and that's another way of saying that we've assumed a constant alpha. And to get the electron temperature in these simple models, people generally set the Compton parameter to about unity, and that gives a... There is, sorry. It's tau. Tau, yes, I apologize. I quickly packed that in this morning. Julian's right, there's tau ES in front of the loop behind the four. I'm proposing two new accretion solutions. One which is magnetically advective, and so it's the opposite of this, in which the, and I also call it transitional flow, in which the, you're still turbulent, but the inflow time now is shorter than the eddy turnover time. And so it's really, you enter a flux conservation phase. And when you solve the flux conservation equations for Br and Bphi, you come up with these scalings in which Br increases much more dramatically than Bphi, and that gives you a rather sharp spiral as you go inward. In addition, the pressure has this scaling, and the temperature is flat throughout this transitional region. This is the ADAF collapse. And if you take the ratio of the magnetic stresses to the thermal stresses, they actually increase as you go inward, and it quickly goes to unity, at which point at which point in this model, I assert that the MRI turns off at an alpha, or roughly beta of 1. Inside that region, then, I use Charles Gamy's magnetic dominated solutions, which are the true MDAFs. Alpha is greater than 1, And so the MRI is, and turbulence don't play a role in this. It's laminar flow. BR increases faster than B phi inward, but not so dramatically. And alpha increases as r to the minus 2. And the temperature actually drops. So there's a peak in the temperature in this transition region. And the plasma is still warm, very warm, but it doesn't reach 10 to the 12 degrees K at all.
BR is completely dominant over B phi. Doesn't BR have to go like 1 over R squared?
Actually, that was the solution I got earlier, in that solution, you just assume that you're conserving flux within a vertical scale height. In this solution, you assume that the vertical pressure, the vertical stresses are supported by magnetic pressure, and so that's a slightly different constraint on BR, and as a result, you get a slightly different solution. You get BR going as r to the minus 3 halves, and you also get the height of the disk actually going as r to the 1 half, so that H over R actually increases as you go inward, and when you get near the black hole, the magnetic field structure has about the same physical height as radius, so it's becoming a magnetic field.
Why doesn't the field just pop up further? That's what this is.
What's holding it down? The weight of the plasma. And as you go further inward, it becomes more and more. I mean, you're starting at the outer portion of this region. You're starting with beta of 1. So the magnetic pressure and the plasma forces are equal. It's only when you go much further inward that it becomes very magnetically dominated. And at that point, it does in the solution. It becomes H over R becomes of order 1.
Until it's force free, and then there are no stresses.
That's right. And then my assumptions at that point break down, and so a force free solution here would be. In this case, for the inner regions, would be a better approach. So here's the synthesis in the outer regions. Actually, circumferencing IF and the ADAFs are quite similar solutions. As you can see, they both have the height going scaling with the radius, BR and B phi scaling as r to the minus 5 quarters, temperature going as r to the minus 1, and the velocities scaling roughly as r to the minus 1/2. In the transitional flow, things change. It's actually over a fairly short range in radius, but it's important in that it gets you set up for this magnetically dominated portion. And in that portion, the disk height actually increases in relation to radius until you get close to H over R1, and the temperature drops because you're being magnetically supported, not thermal supported. So, and the important thing to see is that in this transition region, alpha increases inward, and as you reach this point here, it reaches roughly unity, and then it increases even further. Beta decreases proportionally, and you get a magnetically dominated flow. That's the suggested structure for the plateau state. So before I go on, I'd be curious about comments and Even swings and arrows, if you got them.
Come back to Jürgen's point, and how do you actually affect the solution's quantity? Now we have to know whether you can
look at the solution's. Oh, now that, Actually, I'm appealing to paper Julian wrote some years ago, and that is that as...
Oh, wow, you can't take those.
Can't take that seriously, huh? Okay. That as the field lines become radially dominant and stronger, that they actually drain of plasma, and then the plasma actually channels in towards the black hole, and they become stronger simply because of the amount of plasma that's held in the field lines drops.
Is that you're referring to the same superseded paper? That assumes a constant scale height, just have a simple calculation. And I believe there was even a comment that there would likely be significant vertical forces. And
well, in this model, the vertical forces are provided by the magnetic field.
It's well, magnetic field, that's where they come from. Yes. You expect it to expand up.
Yes. Yes.
So we draw the picture of those field lines with a kind of gentle loop to them. That's not how I would imagine it.
And that's not how I imagine it either. PowerPoint only gives me so much. I'm serious. I did the best. But listen to my words and not the simple drawings.
Can I sketch it up with your finger?
What's that?
Can you sketch it so we know what you're waving?
Well, yes, I can.
This field is field that is left over from the ADAP. I mean, it's already there, and then the flow cools, and then the field reorders itself somehow, right?
Yeah.
It hasn't been carried in. Ab initio as a strong field.
No, that's correct. This is the field is
deriving
itself. It starts out in a high beta plasma, and it's the draining of that field that produces the lower beta plasma. Now, you're to answer Julian's question, in the outer regions, H over R is the order constant. So H is the R.
In the outer
end. And then as you go into the transition region, which is fairly small, this goes as R to the three halves. So it's dropping very dramatically. Okay. It's probably maybe not that dramatically, but this is a sketch again. All right, it's not H proportional R. And then it goes as R to the half. So H over R actually increases as you go inward, but RH decreases. So it's decreasing, but it's decreasing more slowly.
Where are the field lines? In the air, magnetically
dominated. In this model, the field lines are all within the structure. No, they are popping up. This is the height at which they pop up, relative to the plasma that's there weighing them down. Now there might be Parker instabilities, which I haven't taken into account.
Oh, you don't think that can be broken by them?
Correct. I have not.
Oh, that was
yes.
So you would expect to be probably just to use the research. You know what?
Yes, that's right. No, this is just a simple vertical pressure balance model with the okay. Just to see what the structure like might look like under those conditions.
So it seems like you know when the NRI is not very efficient on V5, and Parker is having the base over, which means that it's very hard actually to keep a strong V5
modules. At that point, you actually have a disk solution, which is not really related to the strong field, and you would have a magnetosphere solution, which would be mostly force free. I have not done that. Okay. Does that answer your question, Jean? And does that look better than what I do with PowerPoint?
Actually, I just want to point out that we're 5 minutes after the point that you started, and
okay.
It's great. It just never takes so long as everyone knows that.
Well, let me
ran over time.
Let me then continue on.
People have been complaining to me that we spend too much time interacting, and they want to get some work done. That's all. It's not, well, it has nothing to do with
these meetings or people.
Who would do that? I mean, that's what this is all about.
Right? It is what it's all about. That's my response.
Okay. I'm enjoying this. Anyway, the assertion here is that we're not really ion pressure supported at all inside these things. We're magnetically supported. And whether it's the way I've done here or whether it's something more related to a force-free situation, I think that this is where we should start looking. That we should start looking at inwardly directed magnetically pressure-supported magnetospheres instead of ion pressure-supported models. It just doesn't seem to be the evidence for the latter in these X-ray binaries. The fact that a steady jet is produced by open field lines and strong field lines, I think, is one reason for looking at this. And the fact that you get the bandwidth limited noise and the QPOs are another. So this is, I put this far spectra thing in here. We've already discussed it. Some people ask me, how did I get these scaling laws? So let me just briefly go through that. The idea is sort of a combination of the analytic theory and the modern turbulence theory. In particular, if we look at the turbulence spectrum for driven turbulence from Marin and Blackman, we find that it's actually very peaked. It falls off as sort of a Kolmogorov, and it's peaked at the driving frequency with maybe some power at very, very long wavelengths. In the ancient accretion disk analytic theory, all we could tell about the turbulence was that it may have had a velocity of something like alpha times the sound speed and a density, a mass density of some, which is described by some scaling law. So, unfortunately, disk power spectra are not that peaked. If we draw the Marin and Blackman spectrum on top, we get something that's very peaked, whereas this is much more shallow from Borgen et al. So,
Blackman, temporal power law or spatial power law?
It is in K, but if it's a local homogeneous turbulence, then it's characterized by a single sound speed, so you can convert K to mu. That's my claim. So this is equally power versus mu, power per unit frequency versus frequency, but it is that actual drawing station.
Well, but that simulation is not forced at a particular frequency. It's forced at a particular wavelength.
Yeah.
But the forcing is quite different.
Yeah.
In order to clear the local frequency spectrum, the turbulence translates directly into fluctuations in the light.
That's perfect.
Why didn't you just use a power spectrum from one of the NRI simulations?
What me? because you didn't do one with cooling. That's the point here. Let me get on here. But what I wanted to try to do is first fit this sort of thing and see if the techniques, simple techniques I was using, work roughly. And so I assumed that the spectrum was actually just like photon spectrum in this, that the power spectrum is actually built up by many of these Marin Blackman type spectrum. And so what I did then was say that the disk is turbulent, but we're only seeing it when it rises up above the size of one surface. And so I integrated over skin depth and then summed all of those with the weighting of each one of them of rho v turbulent squared, where that's alpha times the sound speed. Then I attached to each, that gives me a scaling with radius, and then to each one I attached a characteristic driving frequency, which was a Keplerian frequency at that radius, and that gives a spectrum that goes as new to minus one-third. But that's total power at a particular radius. And if you take the derivative of that with respect to frequency, you get new to minus four-thirds. And that's not too bad of a fit to that sort of slope. It's a little bit steeper, but this is about five-quarters, and this purple line is four-thirds. So now I tried the same thing for this sort of spectrum where we think where we know a jet is being produced and we think we're seeing the ADAP. And I tried the evaporative corona model from Ezen et al. They use an m dot into the corona of order minus one, and that gave me new to the minus two-thirds, which didn't fit. But if you go to an ad hoc order of minus two, you actually get a fairly flat slope. Now, admittedly, this is just deriving a one-parameter model from a one-parameter fit. But the value that you derive is not that unreasonable. And at least it indicates that if there is some sort of evaporative corona above the disk, then in order to get this kind of power spectrum, we need to have it evaporating very rapidly as you go inward above the disk, more rapidly than a standard part of the minus one. That's about all I want to say about that. This, I did mention that this cutoff is very similar to a Kolmogorov cutoff, but that is that'll have to wait for Ron and his colleagues to try to do a better job at measuring that actual cutoff and getting rid of a lot of the instrumental effects. So these are the summary conclusion slide. I would strongly encourage theorists to not, even though last week was a tough time for everyone in trying to make sense of all of this, this overwhelming amount of information on these sources, they really have the information that's going to help us understand how accretion takes place, and in particular how it triggers jets. I also would like people to look at in some detail at models where each decade in frequency on the power spectrum actually reflects the Keplerian frequencies. That leads to this idea of a strong magnetosphere in the inner regions of the disk in 1915, because the inner portion is very quiet, and that means that parts of the disk that reflect high Keplerian frequencies are very quiet. And the QPO, if that reflects a Keplerian frequency, also means that there's a structure rotating at a very very constant rate. So, and finally, those of you who do pure numerical simulations and want to point to possibly to something that your simulations might refer to, I would look toward the microarcsecond cores of IDP quasars as being the most plausible thing to point at. And that's all I have to say. Thanks very much.